Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly look at the technology world from a blind and low vision perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, you can send us an email or you can attach a voice message to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, I'll be chatting with assistive technology expert Jonathan Mosen. Hubert Pavalkovic tries out the new AI chatbot in the Passenger Assist app, and we'll be exploring another tech timeline. So another interesting week as always. Jackie Brown is on holiday this week, but we have Hubert and Natalie Curran joining us. Welcome into both of you. Hubert, anything caught your eye this week?
It's quite small. I know certain providers, news providers such as 9to5 Google, refer to this as a quality of life update to Google Gemini and Gemini app on iOS. And what it does is, so when you would ask for overviews of PDF files to be able to kind of listen to them, what it would do up until this point is bring up a player, but bring up the player screen, the audio player screen, in a web browser, which, I mean, web players are okay, but aren't always the most convenient. And the quite simple addition now is you've got a built-in audio player in the Gemini app, which it's not massive, but it makes things just that little bit more convenient, because I'm not the biggest fan of web apps. Sometimes they can be a bit tricky, one as if something is nice and built into the app, it just makes everything nice and smoother for me.
Yeah, I like that. The one that really annoys me is when you get a feature that's in an app, but then when you click on it, it kicks you out to a website, like, or to a web view anyway.
It just strikes me as lazy. Like, just put it in the app.
Yeah. So does that allow you to, so you can upload it within the app and then get the summary there? Is that how that works?
I believe so, yes. So you can get an audio-based kind of overview of a PDF, for example, and play it back in audio, kind of like an audiobook as it was described.
Yeah.
But get all of it in the app rather than kind of being taken to websites as well. So, yeah, it's quite a small feature, but I think it's just, it makes things a little bit nicer.
Natalie, anything new with you this week?
Yeah, I've got one bug, one tip, one throwback. So I'll start with the bug first. I wondered if anybody else is having this problem with the Meta Ray-Bans, because I've been trying to use them a bit more recently because it has actually been sunny. I know, shock. We do get the sun in Glasgow occasionally. But when I phone someone, it works fine. When they phone me, they disconnect. And then when the call ends, they reconnect. It's really annoying. Anybody else had this problem?
No, I've not had that myself. Mind you, I don't do calls on my Meta Ray-Bans often. It seems that when I wear them, no one wants to call me, which, you know, is perfectly fine, because then I can listen to my music when I'm walking or listen to the sports. I don't get too many phone calls. I've had various kind of experiences with phone calls. Sometimes they'd connect and people would hear me. Sometimes they couldn't hear me and the call wouldn't connect properly. But so I've had plenty of calls equally that worked quite reliably, and I loved the hands-free aspect of them.
The tip that I was going to say is a very small one, just a very me one. And that is, if anybody has updated to Windows 11 and, like me, likes to use emojis, you might have found a bit of a bug with the emoji window. So normally what you do is you press the start key plus full stop to bring up the emoji window, and then you can just start typing and it bring up different emojis within that within your search field. And then once you've found the emoji you want, you press enter and you'd escape out of it. Now when you press escape, it takes you out of the whole thing that you're in. So if you're in an email, for example, it will close the email and ask you, do you want to save it, delete, or continue working on it? And a couple of times I accidentally hit the wrong one, and it's so frustrating. But I found a simple fix is press space twice and that closes the window and takes you out of it. You do need to then delete the extra space that you've just typed, but at least you don't have to run the risk of accidentally deleting a whole email, which is very annoying.
Ah, nice. I only recently found out about that shortcut, you know, the Windows key and, is it, you say Windows and full stop to bring up the emoji panel. I didn't know about that.
It's only because a colleague told me that's how I could do it. And I love emojis. I think if you're a screen reader user, it can sometimes be hard to judge how an email is going to land. It's kind of that classic thing you're taught in school of be careful of the written words, that, you know, people don't always take things the way you intended. And I like emojis to really spell it out that, you know, I might be being abrupt or brief in my email, but I'm doing it for speed rather than because I'm annoyed at you. So a wee smiley face will kind of take the edge off that.
Yeah, I do that.
That's a good suggestion, to be fair, because like you say, text can often be misinterpreted because you don't really get that. That's why I love voice messages so much. What people don't love is that my voice messages last 3 minutes and higher, but you know.
Yeah.
And the last thing I was going to say is a bit of a throwback, and it's not really tech, but I recently rebought myself, because goodness knows where the old one is, a handheld braille labeler, because I thought, much as I love seeing AI, and I really do love it, I am getting fed up of spinning spice jars trying to find out what it is that I'm adding to my cooking. And when I accidentally made toothpaste chicken, as I'm now calling it, a few weeks ago, wow. I thought, enough's enough. I'm going to label things. Because my cooking has expanded, but with that has come my spice rack and my inability to keep up with it. Because when I had 10, I could memorize where they all were. Now I'm sort of encroaching on 15/20, and I don't use them all the time. I thought, do you know what? Sod it. Go back to the old days. Get a braille labeler. It's been quite nice, actually. And it was something Emma Tracy said on the Radio 2 show, actually, a while ago. She said, braille is just easy. You know, it's for speed. And I thought, do you know what? You're right, actually. Sometimes there's nothing wrong with just sticking a braille label on something.
Yeah.
It is fantastic. I love just being able to stick a braille label on something and just quickly read it without having to kind of take my phone out, unlock it, find the app, find the right mode, point the phone at it, hope it gets it. Sometimes it's just quicker.
And you can't always do that on those little tiny jars of spices, can you? Like, it just doesn't, in my experience, it just doesn't get the text on something that small. Well, a little one from me this week. I don't know how new this is. I saw this in the Be My Eyes newsletter a couple of days ago, that they've now partnered up with Emirates, you know, the airline. So you can call them through the Be My Eyes service directory. So apparently they can help you book flights on the Emirates website. They can help you get assistance at the airport, and they can also help you during your flight. This is according to the announcement, which I find interesting. I mean, I can see the use, like if you need to read the menu or read the cards that are in your seat, or if you need to get to the, you know, toilets or something. The other question I would have, though, is because I know planes have Wi-Fi nowadays. Is that good enough for a video call? I think you'd
have to pay a decent amount for a good Wi-Fi on the plane. I think they have various tiers. From my experience, when I've flown to Dominican Republic a few years ago, there's like a basic tier which gives you very basic messaging Wi-Fi for an hour. And then there's higher tiers you can get depending what you want. I rarely get Wi-Fi on the plane because I'm just like thinking I can just put on a book and, you know, be done with it. But it can be useful.
Okay, well, thanks, guys. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk. Jonathan Mosen is a name you might be familiar with if you've followed the assistive technology world for a while. He's done some fantastic work and had quite a few roles in technology and accessibility and advocacy around Braille and all sorts, really. His latest role is working with the National Federation of the Blind in the US as their Director for Accessibility Excellence. And he joins me now. Jonathan, welcome to Tech Talk.
Hi, Callum. It's good to be back, and thank you for the generous introduction.
For those who maybe haven't heard of you or are not so familiar with your work, do you want to just talk a bit about you and a bit about your background, I guess, and how you got started with technology?
Sure. As you said in the intro, I've done quite a few assistive technology roles over the years. I've also done other things. I've been an advocate, a chief executive back in New Zealand, stood for parliament a couple of times, So I've kept pretty busy, run my own consultancy company, have done some things in internet radio and podcasting. In terms of technology, I think, some of the first technology I used was the Opticon from Telesensory Systems, which was a pretty innovative tool for its time. We did have the original Kurzweil reading machine in New Zealand, which was great. And eventually in the 80s, we were talking, we got given a VersaBraille and an Apple IIe. And I can't really explain why, but for whatever reason, I just took to this technology. It was intuitive to me and I understood it. So I was able to negotiate a pretty cool deal with the teachers back then, which was that if they exempted me from the PE periods, I would help them to come to grips with the technology. They could, you know, send me there in the PE period and I'd show them how to use the computer. So it felt like a good deal at the time to a teenager, perhaps not so much now.
I only laughed at that point because that is so similar to my kind of school time. PE was not something that I was too keen on. It wasn't really something that they knew how to make accessible, to be honest. So I often got excluded from that, which looking back is terrible, but for a 13, 14-year-old, that was fine. Yeah, I was quite happy with that.
There you go.
So you mentioned kind of getting started with the VersaBraille and the Apple IIe and just taking to that. Was there a particular point where you, and I know you've had various kind of career paths, if you like, but was there a particular moment where you realised that you wanted to go into more technology as more of a career?
Technology as a career was something that happened to me by accident, absolutely, because I always wanted to work in broadcasting. That's what I was focused on. And I did, you know, I encountered a little bit of resistance when I talked to people in the radio industry when I was a teenager. So I decided, well, I'll prove them wrong. And I set up a radio station. You could actually apply to a regulatory body that was around in New Zealand back then to get a temporary radio license. And I did this. I mean, it was incredibly bureaucratic. And I wrote that application on the Apple IIe using software called Braille Edited, actually. And I put that application in and I was really surprised that we got granted a license. And then I funded that from advertising. We went out and we sold ads to hire all the equipment and put this massive AM radio mast up. So radio was what I loved. Radio was what I wanted to do. Then got involved in advocacy. But I guess the connection came because I was using a lot of technology. I enjoyed using it. And then I was asked to set up ACB Radio, which was the first global internet radio network for the blind community. And I started a show there called Main Menu, which is still going, I think. And 25 years later, but it was as a result of that, really, and also my contacts that I've had for a long time with Russell Smith of Pulse Data in New Zealand, that they came calling and they said to me, we'd like you to come and manage the Braille Note product line and the blindness product line. So I've always been an enthusiastic adopter and user of technology, but it was very much an accident that I actually got involved in the manufacturing and the design of this technology.
Yeah, and that's one thing I was going to ask about, the product management side with Humanware, or was it Pulse Data back in them days when you were working for them?
It was. And then what happened was Humanware was the name of Pulse Data's distributor in the United States. And then when Pulse Data bought VisuAid in 2005, which was a Canadian company, we were looking for a new name. And everybody said, well, Humanware is pretty cool. You know, we own the name Humanware. Why don't we just take that international? And so that's how Pulse Data International and VisuAid became Humanware.
And obviously one of the products that I guess you were responsible for was the Braille Note, was it the M-Power?
Yeah. People still come up to me and say the M stands for Mosin. You know, they seriously think I would do that. It just means Empower, but we called it M-Power because it seemed cool at the time, but it's amazing how many people think it's the Mosin Power.
I would own that if I were you. The power of Mosin.
no. Oh, gosh.
What was managing something like that like? Because I think there's a massive debate these days around, and you could debate for hours if Braille note takers and these sorts of devices are still needed now. But I guess back then, you know, we didn't have the iPhone. We sort of had smartphones, but not really. You know, and I guess the needs of the blind community were pretty different back then.
I mean, it was an interesting transition because I had spent sort of 3 years or whatever it was doing these technology reviews. And I know that a lot of the manufacturers used to sit there waiting to hear them and waiting to hear what we were going to say, because I think we had a reputation back then for being a straight shooter, not showing any bias. If we found any faults, we would point them out constructively. So people looked forward to those reviews. So going from that side of the fence to the other, where I was suddenly responsible for one of the key products in the industry, was a big transition and a huge responsibility, because you can't do it all and you're inundated with great feature suggestions and you have to prioritize based on what's achievable given the engineering resources available, what are people asking for, all those sorts of things. And so it was good. The one regret that I have, strong regret that I have about my time at Pulse Data was, you know, the Braille Note was a very good user interface. It was optimized for blind people. Jonathan Sharp, who designed Keysoft, a guy from New Zealand, is one of the most underrated people in this industry. He made a huge contribution to user interface and to the experience of blind people in education especially. But it was a closed platform, and that created some difficulty for the company as things started to speed up in technology, because it wasn't possible for the engineers to keep up with the fast-paced trends in tech. So I was very, very keen for the Braille Note to introduce an SDK, a software development kit. And the concept that I had in my head at the time was, we could create an ecosystem of third-party applications that could be developed for the Braille Note, and that way it wouldn't require the Pulse Data engineers to do everything. What I'd essentially invented was sort of like an app store concept before the app store came along, but it involved a significant amount of resources to build the infrastructure that would make an SDK possible. And there were more pressing priorities for those who were counting the beans, you know. Do we do an SDK or do we put a web browser in the product? Well, a web browser is going to sell a lot more products in the short term, so you go with that. The trouble with that approach was it just meant that the product fell further and further behind, because there just wasn't the resources being invested in the long term. So, yeah, I really regret that I couldn't get the SDK over the line.
Yeah, and I think that was, I mean, my first Braille Note was the Apex, which I believe came after it.
Yes.
And I think that was similar in that it was a closed platform, but I did notice there were more apps that kind of appeared there. I think a Dropbox client appeared there, which in some ways made it a little bit more mainstream. You could use a few more mainstream services with it, but it was still closed off, whereas now they've gone down the kind of Android route with the note takers. What's your view on that? Is that kind of, in a way, obviously Android wasn't around at the time, but is that kind of what you were going for?
Well, we are concerned here that the version of Android is quite outdated now, and we are getting feedback from some of our members around the country here that that's causing some issues now with systems rejecting access because it's such an old version of Android. And we've discussed that with Humanware, and they're aware of it, and I'm sure they have some things in the works. I think we do need to think about the future of what we call the note taker in the current environment, because it is important for our blind kids to be prepared for the big wide world. And that means working in open operating systems. It means having good Windows skills. Potentially, you know, you could do a lot of things with the Apple products. iPad in particular is a pretty popular choice in education, and we are monitoring with a lot of interest what's going on with iOS 26, where Apple is introducing a Braille access mode, with a little kind of mini note taker and all sorts of things. So I suspect that that's where the world is going. It's just so hard now when you look at the fast-paced world of tech. And, you know, even 3 years ago, not many people were using generative AI, and now it's dominating our lives. So it's hard for these companies in their proprietary ecosystems, even when they have an open operating system as their base, to keep up. And I think consumers are crying out for something a bit different.
We'll hear more from Callum and Jonathan Mosen later on in the programme.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Time now on RNIB Tech Talk to explore the timelines of technology as we talk to various blind and partially sighted technology users and find out exactly what technology they've used, what they currently use now, and what makes a difference, and to dive into the future of technology a little bit as well. Joining me today to take me through their timeline is Craig Brown. Craig, thank you for joining us.
No, absolutely. It's a pleasure.
The first thing I want to start with, as always, is, well, the beginning, really. What was kind of the first piece of, you know, technology that you used with Sightloss?
My first piece of technology was my iPhone, because I've always been an Apple iPhone user. And even as a sighted person, obviously the features in the background were always there. So when I did, like, eventually lose my sight to the point where I was unable to read off my telephone screen, now I had the features there to, you know, just to rely on and back me up. So yeah, it'd be definitely my iPhone. And it's weird because I didn't even know it at the time.
How did you find the accessibility features when you kind of used them for the first time, as opposed to using your iPhone with, you know, with sight?
So when I got diagnosed with my sight conditions, there was a lovely lady at the hospital that worked alongside an organisation called Vista. And she put me in touch with one of their tech support teams, and he came out to my house, and lovely man, and just sat down, set my phone up so it had a larger screen, because at the time I still had a little bit of usable vision, and then started teaching me how to use the voiceover features and stuff like that. And I also now help co-run a sort of session at Vista's head office for people to join in, either through Zoom or in person, and help them with any questions or queries, and just keep them updated as well. So all really through the Vista organization.
What is your favorite piece of technology that you have used or that you are using?
So I recently treated myself to a set of Ray-Ban Meta glasses, and I absolutely love them. The fact that they can just pick up on what I'm holding in front of me, either it being a meal, and then it would ask me to turn it over. So the AI feature can read the description or instructions, cooking instructions and stuff like that. And the best thing I kind of tell people with the Ray-Ban Meta glasses is you don't just get the help and support with, you know, the AI. It will also suggest little things. So say if I'm making a sweet and sour chicken rice, it will go, I also suggest some vegetable spring rolls with this dish. And I'm like, that's really cool. I like that feature. So yeah, my Meta Ray-Ban glasses are excellent.
Would you say the Meta Ray-Ban glasses is kind of the technology that's currently making the biggest difference in your life?
Massively, yes. Also, I am massively into my music. I run social media platforms called The Blind Guitar Guy. And so as you can imagine, when I'm out and about walking around or catching a bus or something, I'll be listening to my music. And with using your normal headphones, you're blocking the surrounding noises that you kind of rely on when you have sight loss. Say like with a bus drives past, or, you know, there's a push bike going around or something, you can kind of hear it. Well, with normal headphones, you can't. With the Ray-Ban Meta glasses, with the speakers built into the arms of the glasses, I can still enjoy my music or podcasts or anything else, and also stay aware with the surrounding noises.
That's what I really like with these glasses. I use them pretty much all the time, especially outdoors. I do use the AI features too, of course, especially for trying to figure out what I'm holding or read menus in restaurants is kind of another favorite of mine. But I love the music and the ability that, you know, you can listen to music and still keep the noise out, the noise in from the background, and also be able to use hands-free at the same time when you're walking. You don't actually take your phone out and stop and fiddle with it and try to send a message while trying to not walk into a tree at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, the Meta's, I think it's only on its second update, so I'm really looking forward to what's coming in the future with the Ray-Ban glasses, the smart glasses. It's going to be so interesting. I know they're releasing a live feed feature, so you'll be able to say, hey, Meta, look around and spot my keys, and you'll look around your living room, and it's, you know, live feed, which is going to be massively helpful.
Yes, it's already available in certain parts of US and Canada, so it'll be... I mean, I've used equivalents of it on my phone, especially to help me use inaccessible appliances such as dishwashers or air conditioning units, and the live feed just makes that bit more of a difference because you don't need to constantly take pictures. You can just ask what's on this screen and it will tell you, and it will do a pretty decent job of that too. One of my favorite parts, and because of how quickly technology evolves, you can always be quite creative with this, but what would you like to see in the future of technology, of the ever-evolving technology? What would you like to see the future of tech for it to be? What would it be for you?
So I would, there's two things actually. Me personally, because I'm a guitarist, I learned to play guitar after I lost my eyesight because it gave me something to do. I would like to see sort of accessible guitar tuners, and it goes for like piano tuners, violin, bass, ukulele and stuff like that. I would like to see a feature where it's not visualized. You can learn to tune by ear and stuff like that, but people like myself that started off because, you know, they lost their eyesight, they wanted something that they were able to do, you know, we don't know how to tune by ear. The second one would be to have more mobile apps and stuff like that, some sort of technology where you're able to check your eye health, because I reckon prevention instead of a cause could be, you know, the main target of technology.
Fantastic. Quite an interesting viewpoint there, especially for music tuning, because there's not that many, but yet there's plenty of requests that I've seen from many blind and partially sighted people that would like to have apps or technology that helps them to tune their instruments a bit better.
Yes. So,
well, thank you very much, Craig Brown, for helping us explore your tech timeline here on RNIB Tech Talk.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Have a great day, everyone.
Let's have a quick look through the inbox then. We've had an email in from Graham, who says, hi team, a bit of positive news on the advocacy front for a change. He says the latest Hive app version 13.2 has now fixed the accessibility issues that voiceover users were experiencing when trying to set schedules. So he says you can now set heating and lighting schedules very easily. The only minor issue now is that you can't tell which of the three tabs on the heating part of the app is selected when you're using VoiceOver, but you can easily work that out from the information that's displayed. Now, this did come in a few weeks ago, and we're only just getting round to it, so there's a chance that even that might be fixed now. So just have a look in the... If you've got your automatic updates on, then hopefully you've already got this. You should have got it a little while ago, but if not, then check the App Store. Version 13.2 or higher, I guess, should now have those issues fixed. So we've also had an email from Amy, who's a new listener from the US. So welcome, Amy. And she says she's downloaded Todoist. And although I'm an Android user, I can't believe how accessible it is. It's fabulous. Yeah, well, I'm with you on that one. I'm still loving Todoist. And finally for now, an interesting email from David. He says, is there a voice assistant that will interact with the person speaking to it? For example, I work with someone called Catherine, spelt with a C, and it'll make sense why I told you that in a minute. And when I'm dictating, I would like it to check with me whether Catherine is spelt with a C or a K. Does anyone know if this sort of thing exists? It's an interesting one. I'm not sure about this one, to be honest.
The only solution I could really come up with is a bit like just autocorrect. So if you normally type Catherine with a C, then I think it would learn that and default to that. Equally, if you're then typing to a different Catherine and that begins with a K, it might stick a C on it. But it's a really good point, and it's definitely something I've thought of before when I've dictated something, which, to be fair, I don't actually do very often, but on the occasions I have, one of the reasons I don't dictate very often is because I then start panicking about what is it actually written, and I feel the need to go and spell everything back to myself. So it doesn't actually save me time in a lot of cases for that exact reason. So I don't know of any solutions. So if David comes up with one, I'd love him to let us know.
Yeah, I have a similar thing with dictation. I always have to double check what, I mean, I always kind of double check what it's written anyway. But a good example of this, I know two people called Holly, and one of them is with a Y and one of them is with an IE. And I always have to double check which one is it's used.
I've got an ironic one for this one where whenever I type in the word site, or that is SIGHT site, dictation often changes it to SITE site. And I get this all the time, which can be quite infuriating because when I don't check it, it just keeps doing it.
That is annoying. I got some entertainment from, wasn't dictation, but just voiceover, speaking of different spellings, where I had three different people on my Facebook called Becky. A voiceover called one of them Becky, one of them Bexy, and one of them Beaky. Because they all had different sounds. I have to say, I quite like posts from Beaky.
Yeah, I quite like that. Don't know how Becky would feel about it, but
yeah.
The only thing I could think of, and I have no idea if this would work, but if you went on to something like Gemini or the voice mode of ChatGPT or one of them and said, right, I want you to dictate this, but if you're not sure of a spelling, check it with me. I don't know if that could work. And then you could copy and paste the result of that into whatever you're writing. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if that comes eventually with all the features of AI we've got now. But let's throw that out there. If you've got any suggestions for David, then let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We return now to my chat with Jonathan Mosen, where I asked him the age-old question of mainstream versus assistive technology.
I think that blind people are a unique market, and we are absolutely entitled to be served by products that cater to our needs. And I think sometimes there's a little bit of a cringe factor that creeps in for some people where they kind of puff up their shoulders and get all superior and say, I use a mainstream product, as if that somehow makes them or the product superior. I think what really matters is what tool allows us to get the job done most efficiently and effectively. So my concern isn't so much that it's not, quote, mainstream, unquote. My concern would be if we're in an environment where it's very difficult for those companies to keep up, then I think we should be concerned about that, because in the end, it boils down to how many things can you do? What tasks can you get done with this technology? And, on Living Blindfully, the podcast I used to run, we used to talk quite a bit. I would say to people, the Victorida stream is a very interesting example to me, because many of us now have a smartphone of some description, be it an iPhone or an Android smartphone. And there are Daisy players or book players from your local accessible format library or whatever on those smartphone devices. And yet there are a lot of blind people who have a smartphone and something like a Victorida Stream or a Sense player, or now this new one that's just coming out from Orbit, which is a very attractive device at a good price point. So you know, what is it about these products that mean that they're still out there, that people want to buy them? And I think part of it is the physical buttons thing. Part of it is, well, you know, sighted people have their Kindles too, in addition to their smartphones. So, you know, my view on it is, if there's not a need for these products anymore, then people won't buy them, and they'll die a natural death, and that we don't need to be critical of other people's product choices.
It's a bit like the Apple versus Android, isn't it? You get people on quite firm sides sometimes with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interest in this. And of course, this is one of the things that we do here. We try and provide objective evaluations of these things. And at the recent NFB convention, we did a whole, I think it was a 90-minute presentation on comparing iOS and Android, because people are genuinely curious about whether the grass is greener or not. So yeah, there's a lot of interest. And what we're striving for here, we want blind people to be able to make the choices about which operating system to use for the same reasons that sighted people do. So some people just prefer the look and feel of one over the other. Some people like the openness of Android, although, you know, iOS is trying to provide some APIs and things that lessen that. But nevertheless, Android is still more open, and some people just appreciate that philosophically. We want to get there. We don't want to be held back by debates about which is the more accessible. We want them to be equally accessible so that blind people have the same level of choice as everybody else.
And that brings me quite nicely, actually, onto your current role with the NFB. So did I get that right at the start? Executive Director for Accessibility Excellence.
Yes, that's the one, yeah.
So what does that actually mean? What is the role?
It means a bunch of things. So pretty frequently, I work with a lot of technology companies, big and small. So I could be talking, in fact, I am talking today to one of the really big tech players. I can equally be talking to an individual or a small number of individuals who have this, what they think is a great idea for the next big thing for blind people, and they want us to give them advice. We regularly get a lot of feedback from members around the country, and because we're well known and well respected, we can often bypass that first level of tech support who will tell you to turn it off and back on again or reset your thing. So we can get to product management level. We can have influence over any defects and also hopefully the future direction of some of these products. So a lot of things that you're seeing rolling out now, we've had direct impact on, and it's wonderful to see our suggestions making their way into product. So that's part of my work, is that advocacy work. We collect a lot of data from our members about accessibility issues that they are finding, and we do our best to advocate to get some of those critical issues remediated. So there's all that advocacy. I also look after the International Braille and Technology Centre, which is just a remarkable thing. I first visited it 30 years ago, and I would never have dreamed then that I would one day be responsible for it. But essentially, the IBTC purchases one of every piece of technology that is designed specifically for blind people. So we have every Braille display, every unique blindness-specific product, all plugged in and working for people to come and see. We evaluate all of that technology. So when people call us, we try and provide impartial advice. We're not trying to sell you anything. And we take our findings back to the manufacturers, and we work with them because we want a thriving industry where people have the best possible products that they can. So I work a lot with the IBTC as well, and it's kind of wonderful to have that checkbook. And we've just got back from the NFB convention, and I've seen a few new products. And because we have a mandate and a mission to buy absolutely one of everything that's blindness specific, if we don't have it, we'll buy it. And I get the chance to evaluate it along with other members of my team. We also do have a smattering of other products that blind people use. So we can't buy every smart speaker or whatever, because now we've been so successful in our advocacy that there's a lot of technology with accessibility built in, and we can't buy all of that, but we do buy a good selection of it. So that's the International Braille and Technology Centre. I also do the Access On podcast, and also work with our advocacy and policy team on some legislative and legal matters as well, where technology is concerned. So it's a wide and it's my dream job, really, because it combines my interest in technology and my love for advocacy and communication all into this one glorious role. And it's a huge responsibility because so many of these things are manufactured here in the United States. So I know that the work that I'm doing is not only impacting blind people here, but blind people globally.
I don't think we have anything like that in the UK. The best way we've got to try things out is maybe popping down to Sight Village and trying it out in the space of 2 minutes when there's a queue of people behind you.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's a phenomenal, it's like tech heaven, you know. There's no place on the planet quite like it. And we've got to keep up, you know. We've had a couple of new items come in this week that we're currently evaluating, for example. So there's a responsibility that comes with it, but also it is nice. I mean, for example, if I am curious about a particular Braille display and I think, okay, I'm just going to put my personal Braille device aside for a week or two and just use one from the IBTC so that I can become better acquainted with one that I'm not so familiar with, then we can. And, you know, we've got a couple of Monarchs here, for example, which is a really exciting product. We have some of this new HelpTech activator stuff, which is pretty exciting. There's some interesting concepts going on there where you can have like an 80-cell Braille display and you can split it in half or in different segments. And that means, for example, you could be looking at your PC with the first 40 cells, and then on the second 40 cells, you have your iPhone, and the device knows where the divider is, and it can automatically scroll the part of the Braille display that you're looking at. It's phenomenal. You can drag and drop. So being able to play with that technology and provide feedback and ascertain how practical it really is to use, it's wonderful.
I think there is a bit of a feeling with even some advocates that things like Global Accessibility Awareness Day for mainstream companies is often seen as a little bit of a PR exercise, which of course it is in some ways, but you know, they're quite happy to shout about how they commit to accessibility and how much they care about accessibility and it's really, really important to them and all that. And then for the rest of the year, they just go back to not caring about it. And I think a lot of that comes from, you know, you email accessibility@apple.com, just to use an easy example, and you get the standard, thanks for your feedback, we're working on it. From someone who has that rare access, I guess, do you see that in a different light?
I do, but I understand the frustration. I think when you see something that doesn't work the way it's meant to, and it's really affecting your ability to do your job or study or just use the product that you paid for in the way that you have every right to expect, and you're not getting any traction with that, it feels like you're dealing with these faceless, nameless corporations that don't care. From their perspective, I think one of the challenges is there are now so many blind people using this technology, and there's an expectation, I think, that particularly those of us who have been using access technology for a while have of quite a close relationship with the people who provide us with technology. I mean, you know, if you take a few years ago, if something really went badly enough wrong with your Jaws for Windows, you could pretty easily track down Eric Damery or Glenn Gordon. You know, you knew who the key people were. And if you really wanted to, you could hassle them and probably get a response. It's much harder with these very, very large trillion-dollar corporations, and I completely understand that. And the one thing I would say is this is one of the benefits of collective advocacy. So sometimes people say to me, why should we bother with an organization like the National Federation of the Blind when we can all just get on social media? We're our own publishers now. We can do our own thing. If something annoys us enough, we can start a petition and we can advocate for ourselves. But I think one of the real benefits is that we get so much data from people right across the United States, and we can synthesize that data. We can see the trends, and we can then tap into those key people that it's hard for a lot of people to reach and communicate the concerns of the blind community to the people who can actually make a difference, and go beyond that first level where people just sort of make a note of it and it goes in a database somewhere. What we can do is we can try and articulate to these key people, this is why you should care about this particular bug. This, you may not appreciate the magnitude of what this is doing. So that's the value prop, if you will, of the National Federation of the Blind. But I absolutely understand the frustration that people feel about all of this.
And even if people aren't from the US, if they feel like they're getting nowhere with filing these bug reports and they're just getting that standard response from the first line tech support, can they reach out to you or to the NFB to try and help with that, getting that push to the right people?
Yes. I mean, we regularly meet with all of the big tech corporations if something's urgent enough. I mean, you know, the interesting thing is we've put out fires before they've really got started, and people will never know about that. One of the challenges that I have is that I know that the Federation is making a huge difference, but we can't always say what we're doing, because if we breach that trust with some of these big tech companies who entrust us with commercially sensitive information, then they won't talk to us anymore. But equally, on the flip side, if we're not open about what we're doing, then blind people may not trust us anymore. So we're trying to tread that fine line. But yeah, absolutely. I can't guarantee that everything that people bring to us is going to get fixed, of course. But if we see trends and if things are serious enough, we may be able to get some traction. So we do have a bug tracker form and an accessibility tracker form. People can go to nfb.org/CENA. CENA is C-E-N-A. It stands for Center of Excellence in Non-Visual Accessibility, and that bug tracker form is there. People are always welcome to reach out to me directly. I'm pretty visible on things like Mastodon and other social media, and I'm at jmosen@nfb.org. So we welcome getting data that we can take to these companies that it tells them about the impact that some of these things are having.
Of course, you mentioned the NFB convention that's just wrapped up a couple of weeks ago. There's always interesting stuff comes out of that. Any particular highlights for you?
Technology plays a huge part in NFB conventions. So we have the big exhibit hall. For those who haven't been to one of these US conventions, it's just astounding. I mean, a little under 3,000 blind people, where the majority for a week in these big hotels. It's quite remarkable. But in the exhibit hall, there is just a huge number of all the key players. So we were very excited to have Meta with us this year, because the Ray-Ban Meta glasses have just gone so viral in the community. And they came specifically to find out, okay, how are the glasses doing for blind people? What else do you want? And I know that they came away with a lot of good suggestions. We've been providing them with suggestions as well that will be making their way into the product in due time. So Meta's chief accessibility officer also spoke at the general session at the convention. And we had several presentations at the general session, including Jenny Leigh Flurry from Microsoft, who is their chief accessibility officer. One interesting highlight was that we heard from Target here in the United States, and they have made a commitment to make all their self-checkout kiosks accessible by mid-2026.
Wow.
And they showed me this. You know, we've been working with them on it for a wee while now, but they're getting very close. So they showed me this. They had a whole basket full of little packages. And the first thing I had to do as a blind guy who's never really used self-checkout before was just get into the rhythm of how you take one of these packages and scan it on the barcode scanner till it goes beep. But the big difference now is, of course, it's talking and it tells you what you've just scanned and what the price is. You can arrow through to your cart and find out how much you have to pay and choose the payment method. It's truly cool. So there's a lot of technology going on, you know, new wayfinding technology. One of the things that we used at convention, which made a huge difference to me as somebody with a hearing impairment, is the Good Maps people set up their technology. Good Maps, for those who haven't used it, is an indoor wayfinding technology, and they mapped the key spaces at the two hotels we were using. So all I had to do was plug in the name of the room, the conference room that I wanted to go to, and it would give me turn by turn and haptic guidance to get me directly there. That was truly amazing. And we had them in the exhibit hall as well, so you could find the booth that you wanted. We also had NaviLens in the exhibit hall as well to find the booth that you wanted. So, you know, a lot of these companies come to us, they put their best foot forward, and there was just so much interesting technology. It was good to see the Blazy people coming back with a Braille device now. So they were showing us the new 40-cell and 20-cell Braille display, the BT Braille, they're calling it, which is running full Linux and a kind of a note taker in the Linux environment. Just so much to see and do. It was amazing.
The accessible kiosk and checkouts, is that JAWS for Kiosk out of interest?
So they're using their own technology that they've developed. It's open source and it's based on Linux. And yeah, so they've designed this experience from the ground up.
Ah, okay.
And they've consulted us extensively right throughout this process in terms of what the user experience should be like and what's optimal. You know, there are a few things we'd like to see changed. The text-to-speech, I think, could be a little clearer for some, or a variety of voices, but I think they will get there. The fact that there's such a large chain like Target committing to make every single self-checkout kiosk work for blind people, that's quite a win.
Yeah, massively. And this whole thing of having mainstream companies at these conventions, is that quite a new thing? Because it certainly is for us in the UK, having mainstream companies at events like Sight Village.
It's something that we've seen increasingly happen over time. Google is another one who always has a strong presence at our convention. Amazon is there as well. So a lot of these companies put on seminars about very specific kind of topics. So Amazon had a lot, so Google had some, Microsoft had some. So yeah, it's been something that's happened over the last few years now, because what's really happened is that mainstream companies have become access technology companies too. And they realize that. And they come not just to show us what they've done over the last year and what they perceive to be the improvements, but they're coming very much in listening mode as well. They want to know, okay, what should we be adding to our product roadmap in order to continue to serve you well?
Yeah, very interesting work. If people want to get in contact with you or with the NFB, how can they do that?
Well, I'd encourage checking out our podcast for technology, which is called Access On. We also have a general podcast called The Nation's Blind Podcast, which is a great listen as well. The Centre of Excellence in Non-Visual Accessibility is at nfb.org/CENA, C-E-N-A. And we do conduct webinars and other seminars that anybody in the world is welcome to attend. And you can email me directly, jmosen, that's J-M-O-S-E-N, at nfb.org.
Fantastic. And we will be hearing more from you. So stay tuned for that. And for now, Jonathan Mosen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, on last week's episode of Tech Talk, I briefly mentioned a feature in, well, technically in the Passenger Assistance app, which allows you to chat to passenger assistants, or at least to a certain extent. Today, we are actually going to take a look at it a little bit more closely. So if you haven't been listening to last week's episode of Tech Talk, where have you been? Yes, what I mentioned was that now in the Passenger Assistance app, I've found a tab which is called Ask PA, which I can't remember seeing before. And then I found it and I thought, well, that's interesting. What is it? And it turns out it's an AI-based chatbot, and you can ask it various questions regarding train travel. So my kind of interest in this is, what exactly can you ask, and you know, what sort of information you can get? So what I'll show you today is what I've asked it already, to give you a better idea of what we're looking at, and see if we can ask other questions too. So what I'm first going to do is open Passenger Assistance app, and show you the tab and what it says.
Social folder, passenger assistants, one new passenger assistant, new journey, heading, ask PA, tab, 3 of 4.
So it's the third tab along the screen, ask PA.
Ask PA, heading, this is a beta feature.
So yeah, it's still in beta, so you may or may not have it. And if you do, do remember that it's still in the testing phase, so not everything may be working as expected.
Need help planning your next trip? We are testing a new WhatsApp messaging service to provide you with quick access to your questions. When you continue, you'll leave the PA app and move to WhatsApp.
So yes, this works via a WhatsApp chat, which I quite like because I use WhatsApp all the time. So to add that to it would be quite nice.
Our messaging service is there to answer your questions. Feel free to ask anything.
Well, ask anything will be interesting. I presume anything regarding train travel rather than anything off topic, but you know.
This is a beta version, so things might not be perfect yet. By continuing, you agree to our view beta terms and privacy notice, but we'd love to hear what you think. If you send feedback via email, feedback.beta@transreport.co.uk, button, ask PA on WhatsApp, button.
So let me double tap that.
Ask PA, passenger alert, starting compose message, text field.
So we are now in the WhatsApp chat window with the passenger assistance feature.
Message, accessible ticket machine, rows 10, rows 3 to 8 to 14. Where this business uses a secure this business use message, star high the, this business.
So I'm now going to take you through the chat I've had with it already, so you can kind of see roughly what I was testing it with.
Message, star high the waving hand, and welcome to your beta PA rail assistant on WhatsApp star. Read more, button. Feedback, button. Your message, what sort of questions can I ask? 23 July 5th, message, thinking it through, ellipses.
So
23 July 1538, received from plus 447, your message, thinking it through, ellipses. 23 July.
So this is an interesting one. So every time you ask it a question, we'll send you a message to say it's thinking it through. A little unnecessary, but I guess at least it also communicates and keeps you updated with what it's processing.
Message, hi there waving hand, I'd love to help you with any accessibility questions about UK railway stations. Could you tell me which station you're, your message?
So it helps you with accessibility questions relating railway. So it helps you with accessibility questions relating to various rail stations across the UK. That's all great.
Message, thinking it through. Message, hi there, waving hand. Your message, Bedford Railway Station, 23 July 1539.
So I picked Bedford Station. That's where I live.
Message, thanks for mentioning Bedford Railway Station. What specific accessibility information would you like to know about this station? For example, I can tell you about step-free access, accessible toilets, induction loops, or other accessibility features. 23, your message. Other accessibility features. 20, message. Thinking it through. Ellipses. Message. I searched for Bedford Station's accessibility features and found it has step-free access to all platforms via lifts, accessible ticket machines, height-adjusted ticket office counter, induction loops, ramp for train access, tactile paving on all platforms. Accessible parking, 17 spaces, waiting rooms with seating, wheelchairs available. Would you like more specific message?
Now, the interesting part is it mentioned the accessible ticket machines. Keep this in mind because I found it a bit strange when it said it because I found ticket machines quite inaccessible, at least in terms of using them with sight loss. They can be quite inaccessible.
Your message. Thinking it through. Message. Accessible ticket machines are designed to be usable by people. Your message. What do you mean? Message. Your message. What do you mean by accessible ticket machines? 20. Message. Thinking it through. Message. Accessible ticket machines are designed to be usable by people with various access needs. From what I found, these machines typically have features like lower height or adjustable height for wheelchair users, clear displays with good contrast, tactile or audio features for visually impaired people. Simple interfaces that are easier to use. These machines allow everyone to...
So it mentions, talking features and things like that. Now, I've not seen any ticket machine has these. So it's an interesting one. If you do have an accessible ticket machine at your station, do get in touch. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. I'd love to hear about it. We certainly don't have it.
Today, heading, message, star high the waving hand, and welcome to your beta PA rail assistant on WhatsApp star. I'm here. Read more. Feedback button.
So I want to see is, what sort of tasks this can help with again, and see if I get a different response to what I did last week.
Compose message, text field, compose message, work, copy, return, dimmed.
What can you help with?
Inserted what can you help with?
So I phrased the question differently to see if we get a different answer.
Send, message, thinking it through.
So put thinking it through again.
Message, hi there waving hand, I'd love to help you with any accessibility questions about UK railway stations. Could you tell me which station you're interested in, and if you're just looking for general info, that's totally fine too. What would you like to know about? Maybe step-free access, accessible toilets, or how to get assistance. 14. 38.
So it's an interesting one. It looks at accessibility needs. I wonder how far you can go with this. What I'm always interested in is if stations have staff, for example. So let's pick a random station.
Share camera. Compose message. Text field is editing. Insert.
Harlington Railway Station.
Inserted Harlington Railway Station. GIFs work. Walk. Work. GIF compose. Send. Button. Send. Message. Sorry, I am unable to assist you with this request.
So I picked a random station here and it has struggled. So that's an interesting one.
Capel. Return. Delete.
Let me try a different station. Luton Railway Station.
Inserted Luton Railway. Send. Button. Send. Message. Thanks for letting me know you're interested in Harlington Railway Station. What specific accessibility features would you like to know about? For example, step.
So that's interesting. It didn't take the Luton station I then sent it. It looked at Harlington again. But let's persevere.
Camera. Compose message. Gifson's compose message.
Is it staffed? Question mark.
Inserted. Is it staffed? Send. Button. Send. Message. Based on my searches, I've found different staffing information for Harlington Station. There appear to be multiple Harlington stations in the UK. Could you please confirm which Harlington station you're asking about? Is it 1. Harlington and Bedfordshire, 2. Another Harlington station such as one in London, delete.
Harlington in Bedfordshire.
Inserted Harlington and Bedfordshire, go to most recent. Send, button, send.
Let's try that.
Message, thank you for confirming it's Harlington station in Bedfordshire. I've searched for information but I'm not finding specific staffing details for this particular station. Would you like me to 1. Provide you with the National Rail customer service contact number to get the most accurate staffing information for Harlington and Bedfordshire. 2. Tell you about any accessibility features.
So it seems like it may not have all of the answers to your questions. I think so far the biggest use for this feature is to tell you what accessibility features the station has. But you can't really get much more information than that. But I'm curious, though, if anyone else listening has tried this service and managed to get other information or other things out of it that maybe I haven't. It seems quite basic for now, but I quite like this because it would be quite nice to be able to, you know, ask it questions and have a normal chat with it to say, oh, I'm on this train. Do you know what platform it's arriving at? I think we're quite far from that yet, where you can kind of get that sort of information through a chatbot without having to, you know, do so many kind of digging through train apps. Instead, you can just go on WhatsApp, type in the message, and it can do it for you. But I think we are not there yet. But it's one of these things where the potential of this feature, depending what it will be and how far it will go, is fantastic. For now, I think it's mainly for accessibility features at railway stations, but hopefully it'll be much more than that. But yeah, that was a brief walkthrough of passenger assistance chatbot WhatsApp feature, or in other words, Ask PA, here on RNIB Tech Talk.
That's it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in and joining us. If you've got any comments or questions, is there something we should be talking about, let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We always love to hear from you. We'll be back with you next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.